Doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. I will say, I think from a scheduling standpoint, forget the actual event itself, but from a scheduling standpoint, the NHL is doing this right. And it's taken some iterations of how they were going to handle a break. At first, it was thought that like the Atlantic Division and, you know, and the Metro would get the week off before, but now it's a total mix, but there's no gap between there were Wednesday night games and there's Monday night games. And if I was a playing team as Ottawa, you know, I think has the best break. I would love to have my break after the All-Star game. So play right up to it, to the Wednesday night, the Tuesday night, take your break, and then, you know, and then have a break after, I think is a perfect situation. So they can sit wherever they're sitting now, kick back and watch hockey for a few days and then go back to work late week. So I really applaud the NHL from a scheduling standpoint. I think they did get this right. You don't go 2 weeks without hockey or 10 days without hockey. And yet everybody gets a good break.
When we talked to you on Friday, you were undecided if you're going to watch any of the All-Star Weekend or maybe watch some capsulized versions of everything. By and large, Dave, and social media creates becomes a bit of an echo chamber after a while, but seemed to be pretty much across the board the entire weekend or most of the weekend was panned. I guess I'll just ask you this question. Is there any way to fix it, or is it just it is what it is and we just deal with it?
I don't think there's a way to fix it the way the hockey purists would like it fixed. You're not going to get a full-blown game. And I think of some of my own experiences, the two games that we played against the Russians in 1987 in Rendezvous during the All-Star break, that's not going to happen again. And it wouldn't happen again. The Players Association arguably wouldn't let you do it. They wouldn't let 20 of their players play in a highly contested full-speed event. And so I think from a standpoint of, I did poke into it, various points, both Friday night and Saturday. A little more on Saturday, the 3-on-3 was a little more of interest to me than the events. But the events are to draw kids. That's all it is. And it's local to the area, and it's some personalities coming out. Some do and some don't. It's far from perfect, but I take it lightly and just say I'm as concerned about the break for the players, and then you've got to fill the break somehow. So you reward the ones that have been the best through the first half. And you welcome your sponsors, and you hopefully welcome new fans into the game.
And again, I know they play around with it. The 1 year or years ago, probably they had the young guns. You talked, and hey, you know, you were there. I guess I was also saying, if there was a small critique to it, because I'm not too wrapped up, I just look at a guy like Stützle, and could you, in each of the teams, have the first-time guy? Because as you've pointed out, you're just doing it personally, like that's the big deal, right? The first-time guy just thinks this is the greatest thing ever. But when you've gone 15 times like Crosby, it starts to wear thin after a while.
It is, but you still have to reward a Crosby as a star of the game because he's playing so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not there gratuitously at all. He's there because he deserved to be
for
there.
Sure, for sure.
You would like the pool to be bigger to include, and that's something you might consider, Simmer, is a bigger pool. There, you know, there can be more than 40 players, I think there can, and without you know, slighting the process or slighting the idea of an all-star, there could be, you know, a handful more on each side for sure, and reward some of the young stars that you want to bring into the fold.
Is there, I had thought, because each NHL team, I believe, has individual skills competitions. You think it's of any interest just to have, like, whoever might be the fastest skater in Ottawa actually goes to the all-star and we actually declare who the fastest skater. Is there any interest, or because in some cases it's a pretty much anonymous player, that really is something the NHL wouldn't be interested in?
I don't think they'd be interested for that reason. And as you said that, I'm smiling and I'm thinking, okay, how would that change the individual team events? You know, would that ramp things up substantially in the team events?
I'm just talking about the skills itself.
No, but I mean, within the skills competition of Ottawa, would that ramp Ottawa's competition up with the chance to go to the All-Star game?
Right, okay.
You know, that could very well be the case. But then I think if you're going to bring volume, I think you'd bring a Timmy Stützle, you know, a young star, more so than you'd bring an individual who won the hardest shot competition.
I'm sure the NHL did that years ago, guys, didn't they? I'm almost positive that there was a point. And the other side to this is a lot of guys wouldn't want to win the competition because they're not going to play in the All-Star game. And I think for a lot of guys, probably don't even want to be there versus actually getting away and having a
well, there is
nice
the first
break.
Time, though, Simmer, right?
Yeah, that, oh, for sure,
your first-time argument about Tim Stützle would apply
for sure,
to whoever the you declare to be the fastest skater on the Ottawa Senators, if Nick Paul or whatever it might have been back, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, for sure. Right. And I meant more just an augment of one player for each team, you know, that is really part of the whole thing. It's not taking anybody else away. But, again, I just find we were kind of talking, Pooley. It's just interesting that people kind of seem to use this as a weekend to point out everything they hate about the NHL.
No kidding.
I was
no
like,
kidding. I'll tell you what,
really? Are you?
I agree, Simmer. You know, and it's like almost like the you know, everybody just wants to go in and pan it, and I just take it lightly.
Wow.
I'm a little scarred by the whole skills competition, Simmer, and you were there in 93 when we bought the four Washington Redskins in. Do you remember that?
Chip Lowmiller won. David was so upset.
Hardest
shot.
Lowmiller, he shot it harder than I did. I was supposed to go next. The kicker for the Washington Redskins. And, you know, but he was a big kid. He's about 6'3", and he stepped on the ice. The minute he stepped on the ice, he was from like Edina, Minnesota, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And the minute he stepped on the ice, I was like, okay, well, this guy knows what he's doing. There was a big lineman from Michigan. There was a linebacker there. And JR, this kid steps on the ice, and he starts shooting the puck. And I'm like, I'm not going after him. And he went, and he shot like 93.5. And they're like, up next, Dave Poole. And I'm like, not a chance.
Oh,
like it would be like me going out and kicking a 55-yard field goal and then saying, go ahead, Chet, it's under the wind.
Over to you. Over to you.
No way. No way.
So. All right. Well, we don't need to spend more time litigating the All-Star weekend because that's been well done. But that kind of dovetailed yesterday. It was like NHL playoff format became the thing to discuss. And, you know, a lot of people weighing in that they think the current format with the wild card sucks. So what does Dave Poulin think of all the – and there are four options. There's the current wild card system. There's just strictly going division only. There's conference 1-8. And, of course, there's the old school from back in the 80s, league-wide 1-16. Is there a perfect format or because it changes every year, you know, that you're never going to get one that's going to satisfy everyone?
You're never going to get one. I like the way it is. And league-wide 1-16, throw it out the window because you can't – you know, play Vancouver in the first round if you're in Florida. I mean, you simply can't logistically. And so you throw that one out. But I think a lot of this is coming out of the Atlantic Division. I just do because you happen to have three of the top five teams and they're going to see, you know, two of those teams are going to be eliminated in the first two rounds. And I think that's where it's coming from as much as anywhere. And I talk to people in the other division. I'm not hearing a lot out of the Central. I'm not hearing a lot out of the West about it. It seems to be coming from the Atlantic, you know, and the outcry being that, well, you know, how do you get by Vasilevsky in two rounds or, you know, a juggernaut Bruins team or, you know, in Toronto hasn't had success in the playoffs. But I played in, I think, every iteration from, you know, four games in five nights to 2-3-2s to, you know, different systems and different. I think it's fine the way it is right now. I really do. And I think that shakes out, you know, you're going to have. It'll be interesting to see what the argument is in 3 or 4 years when it's, you know, arguably Ottawa and Buffalo and Detroit and you know, that are vying for these same positions.
I just absolutely love the divisional thing. And I think here in Ottawa, from perspective of when they played Montreal and Toronto, again, you're the man to ask, was there anything better than playing in the Patrick and Adams division in the playoffs?
No, and you know what? For a couple of years, it was quite, I mean, think of this irony. We didn't want to play the New York Rangers, and we finished 40-plus points ahead of them. And we thought that was a lousy matchup because they seemed to just ramp up for the playoffs and play their best hockey for 2 weeks and then pack it in again. And so, you know, I think it's really the individual. But the matchups that we had in that Patrick division and just, you know, with Washington, with the Islanders, and with the Rangers at that point, those were the teams we were competing against. We're just – I mean, I think they made the whole – playoffs through the first couple of rounds.
I'm a fan of playing more games in the regular season within your division. Not eight like it was for a while there, but more than the, in some cases, you know, Edmonton and Calgary are playing three times this year. That doesn't seem right. Would you be a fan of more divisional play, even if it came at the cost of, let's say, in some cases, I don't know, if the other conference only came, you know, if eight teams out of the other conference only came every other year, as it were. So we only saw Connor McDavid, let's say, in Ottawa once every 2 years.
And yes,
that's realistic?
I would be in favor of that. And, you know, there were, I mean, we went through a phase, I'm just thinking, where I think we played the Buffalo Sabres 7 or 8 times during the regular season, then another 7 times in the playoffs. You want a rivalry, that's a rivalry. And that builds a whole different level of animosity and a whole different level of competition. So, you know, but you do get the star factor, right, about being in the building every year. And that's that's the aggravation of it. I might knock down the conference a little bit so you saw everybody every year, but in the division you played more. So I might pull from the conference to get to the division rather than the whole league, JR.
Yeah, let me give you my solution. Five games against the other seven teams in your conference, and then home and away against every other team in the league. That gives you 83 games, which I'm fine with, but people said that's stupid. Okay, then add another game then. And I even think they play too many games, but you know they'll never take away games. Add one more game then against your most common geographical rival or whatever to make an 84. Cut down on the preseason, make 84 games. Boom. Five games against your division, two against everybody else.
I'm totally fine with that. I think that works.
Thank you.
And, and in the 83rd game, I don't have an issue with either. We played 84 at times, so
right.
I'm fine with 83.
All right. And it's hard to get the head around, guys, but the thing I was also saying, Pooley, like, I'm pumped to see Tampa and Toronto play. Now, it could be the least kind of the Cowboys effect, but the fact that they played last year and that they go head-to-head again, like, to me, that's the playoff series I'm looking the most forward to right now.
With Boston looming, potentially.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Yeah, I
agree. And then guess what? Once you get through that, you got to face potentially a Carolina or a Rangers team or a Washington team. So I agree. It's not supposed to be easy. And, you know, you can't brag about how strong your division is and your conference is and that pay a price for it as well because you're so strong. So that same strength is why you're good. Like, part of the reason why Boston is this good right now is because Toronto and Tampa are so good. And they have to be that good. They have to play like that, and they know that. They have to compete with them. They have to also market their team with them, and so they have to build their team accordingly. I agree, Simmer. It's part of being good is being good.
Yeah, and you go back historically, guys, the Battle of Alberta, part of you felt bad for Calgary. Nobody ever talks about Winnipeg.
Winnipeg was the lost soul.
Yeah, I mean, what do you...
Lost soul. They had to play one of those two teams.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's exactly right. The great Dale Hawerchuk-led teams, they had some great teams in those years, and they couldn't get by the first round, let alone the second round.
All right, let's talk about a little bit of business done over the weekend, yesterday in particular, in which the New York Islanders, who haven't had Bo Horvat actually play a game for them, signed him to an 8-year extension worth $8.5 million per season. Lou Lamoriello said, it's too much money and it's too long, but he still signed him. So what are your thoughts initially on the deal?
So, guys, when we do That's Hockey in the Gino Retta show, the producers, they'll be in their morning meeting, and they'll say, okay, I wonder if we had anybody this happen to. And usually it's Pooley is the answer, like Pooley had this happen to him. When I got traded to Boston, I signed a new contract before I played a game with the Boston Bruins. And now it was only a 3-year deal. I was 31 years old, and I wasn't going unless I got that new contract. I mean, it was... you know, a stage in my life and in my career. I actually had a business off the ice and it was doing very well. And, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not just moving to Boston for half a year. I'm not. If I'm going, I'm going to make a commitment. And so I did go through that. A couple things on the Horvat deal from both sides. There's a reason Vancouver moved early, guys. And it was their sense of the market for Bo Horvat. And when they got a deal they felt was fair market value, they were concerned, in my mind, the only reason they would move forward is they were concerned that that was going to be the best offer they got. And so they had done their homework on the market for Bo Horvat. So they accept the deal from the Islanders. They make the move early. They take some criticism for it. Did you shop it enough? Did you? But they would have shopped it to the point where they knew what the market was. Likewise, the representation for Bo Horvat does their homework. And they know from the various teams. So think of that first answer on what the market was out there. Think of the second answer. That was a trade, albeit, you know, not a free agent signing. Think of the second answer in that the representation group has an idea of what his market value is as well. So when they do get to the island, and if the island was one of the teams, and they get the chance to get a number that they know would be top dollar in the free agent market. It's easy to say he could have got more, but they get 8 years, they get top market. And so I think those two things answer to the same question, that he did get top dollar. And that is the high end of the market for Bo Horvat, both what value Vancouver got back and what value the agent was able to get from a team that was now desperate because they made the trade for him and they put their chips in. So both things align for me in the way it sets up the player to say, of all the cities in the NHL, I knew the least about what it was like to be an Islander and live on Long Island and play for the Islanders. it's just not a, you know, it's not an area that I knew very much about until my post playing days, and I visited a number of times. It's okay, it's a really nice area. There's a lengthy drive, the new rink different, you know. But most cities, you say, okay, I have a feel for it from playing there. You don't have a feel from playing on the island what it is to live on the island. And that's something that Bo Horvat would have had to do his homework from a family standpoint. And like, I've been to, you know, Bobby Nystrom's home and knew what a beautiful home, what a beautiful area it was, and all those things that as a player you would want to know from a family standpoint. So I'm assuming that each of the respective groups did their homework. And, you know, and Bo Horvat has a young family, and maybe he wanted to say to her, okay, we don't want to go somewhere for 3 or 4 months and then make another move. Once we get, you know, this commitment from them, it's, you know, and that's legacy money. That's family money. That's a whole different level at 8 years times 8.5. So for all those reasons, it makes sense from the player's standpoint.
And as a UFA on 7 years, obviously the math, you got to go north of 9. Is that market even there? To that, Pooley, as well, was a great timing to kind of catch your breath in the All-Star break. You're playing the All-Star game, but if you're going to kind of transition to something, it's not like, hey, I'm on the bird and I'm playing that night, and then you're scrambling to get things down with the family. It was really kind of perfect timing for everybody involved.
Yeah, it arguably was, but a large part of the homework would have been done. That's a really veteran agent, and Pat Morris, and a veteran agent group that he has representing him, and the homework would have been done ahead of time, and as well, the agents group would have had players playing in that market. So they could have lent, it could have said, here's 5 guys to call, you know, 4 of them have kids, you know, as we do our homework here. So those would have all been things that a good representation group like that group would have done.
When the trade was made, there was also a theory that, hey, if Horvat doesn't propel the Islanders forward in terms of the playoffs, that there might be enough time to actually trade him again, that the Islanders might flip him out. Now with a signed contract, does that become a moot point?
That might have been James Duffy leading the way on trade deadline day that was proposing that, JR, as the most exciting thing that could happen. You know, that was within the player's scope that he could you know, negate that because he could get the deal done. And that's when I talk about the homework being done. From the Islanders' standpoint, they don't want anything to do with that thought process. They simply don't, because it means they've failed in the trade, and they've failed for the trade to do what it's meant to do.
Do you think they can pick off Washington or Pittsburgh?
I'm not an Islanders guy, Simmer. I don't. I'd be as worried about Buffalo if I were them. And, you know, and what if one of these other teams does rise? And so I'm not of the mind that this trade alone is going to put them in the playoffs.
You mentioned, I think, with us on Friday that this period of the schedule now between the end of the All-Star break until the trade deadline, which is March the 3rd, is like a 3-week ride on the Autobahn in terms of teams. So what kind of hockey should we expect over the next 3 weeks?
I believe it'll be awesome. I really do. I think it's going to be a full ramp up. You've got freshly rested players. You've got that level of anxiety, if you will, in locker rooms. It just presses forward. This is the final stretch when you're trying to make the playoffs, but you're, you know, and some teams will want to stay together. There'll be a group that gets together and says, we really like each other. We want to stay together. It's up to us, guys. And, you know, and there's a, like, what's going to happen to Florida? Like, in Florida, they're only 3 points up on Ottawa right now, guys. And what's going to happen in Florida? Do they have a veteran enough group in that locker room? And the Islanders would have a veteran enough group. And Pittsburgh and Washington both have enough legacy in their room that have won cups. So I think there's enough push there, but the youthful enthusiasm of Buffalo, I think, is something to watch here. I really do.
All right, good stuff. It all starts tonight with 6 games, including Bo Horvat's debut in Philadelphia for the Islanders. Always appreciate the time, Dave. We'll chat again on Wednesday.
Have a great day, gentlemen.